Next page on our calendar is 99272 Cincinnati Bar Association versus David Harwood. Mr. Phillips. Okay, you need to speak up a little bit.
Very first thing I'd like to do, thank Chief Justice Moyer, Justice Cook, Justice Sweeney, Justice Douglas, Justice Lundberg Stratt, Justice Piper, Justice Resnick. My honor and privilege to be here before you today. Also, I want to acknowledge Maury Tepper, my adversary, who's been a perfect gentleman throughout this proceeding. I'd like to acknowledge David Harwood, who responded here in courtroom today. He's here today because he cares, because he understands genuine remorse about what happened. The facts in this case have been stipulated between the parties. We do not deny that these things occurred. What we're looking for is really motivation. Illegal and immoral, unethical purpose behind these facts. And if you look for a motive, I will challenge that you won't find one. David received absolutely no personal gain with respect to the cases that are before you today. There are six disciplinary counts in the complaint that went forward with the Cincinnati Bar Association.
Had he received a fee before supposedly performing the work that he was going to perform for the client?
No.
Never? Not any of the cases?
No. And in fact, quite contrary, these cases have been an economic loss to date because every one of the clients that was hurt in these cases, David personally paid the judgments or reimbursed those clients for the harm that they caused.
That doesn't seem like anything more than he should have done, certainly.
I'm sorry?
That doesn't seem like anything more than he should have done, since they were greatly disadvantaged by his conduct. That's correct, and you would agree.
I would agree with you wholeheartedly, but I also read your opinions, and I see how many times the lawyers show up here and have not done it.
That's correct.
And David even paid a deductible portion of the malpractice insurance carried by his law firm, Veritech and Bethany.
Was all of this behavior caused by his major depressive disorder?
Absolutely, Your Honor, and that evidence is uncontroverted. We had Dr. Stephen Meredith, whose credentials are submitted into evidence, testify on behalf of David, who is David's treating psychiatrist, whose testimony was not challenged by the relators, that this was caused by depression. And there are really two clusters of these events. The first cluster occurred around 1991, although one of the cases started in 90, the events occurred in 91. I think one of them dragged over to early 92, about a 12-month period. The second cluster was 94-95.
He wasn't a psychiatrist during that time.
I'm sorry, during
he was not seeing a psychiatrist during that time.
During the first, well, he was not seeing a psychiatrist during the 91 period.
That's what I meant.
But then he sought treatment, was thought to be cured, and then was discharged by his doctor from treatment, proceeded to practice for approximately 2.5 years, and then had a second bout of depression. And that caused
this is what concerns me, is that this is an ongoing, it appears it's an ongoing problem, and does he recognize that he needs to continue with that psychiatric treatment and whatever the psychiatrist prescribes for him?
We would submit that he absolutely recognizes it, and in fact, at the hearing, if you read the transcript, one of the proposed sanctions, if you will, was not something that I recommended, the panel recommended, or the relator recommended. It was something that David recommended. He said to the panel, whenever I litigate, you should make me have co-counsel. Now, that is someone who recognizes the problem. David wants to be a member of the bar, and he wants the public protected, most importantly.
In discretion, I can understand the neglect of you, but your client engaged a fair amount of Ryan as well. And David's a client, but I just haven't gotten it done. But the Ryan is much more difficult to connect with the present order.
If I could explain how the human mind works, I probably wouldn't be a lawyer. The psychiatrist tells me the two are related. I can't tell you how. The lying is a way that the mind works. And I'm not a psychiatrist, so I'm kind of struggling with the right words. It's a way to cover up that which one can't deal with at the psychiatric level through causal depression. But it is not a willful, voluntary act. It is simply a way that David had to deal with it.
When was the last of these occurrences?
I believe the last occurrences occurred February 1995.
What's been the record between then and now?
Completely unblemished.
There have been no more complaints?
Absolutely none that I'm aware of.
Does treatment continue? Does treatment continue as we meet today?
Treatment continues as we meet today.
And has he been actively practicing?
He has been actively practicing as an attorney.
Thank you.
Before coming up here, I touched base with Dr. Meredith to see how David's going. He tells me that he is, in fact, doing very well, monitoring the medicine continue. And he fully expects David to stay in complete recovery. However, he still wants him to continue with the monitoring because he did have a relapse.
It may or may not have any importance, but has there been any statement made or contact with or forthcoming of any of the grievance with regard to him, the grievance between then and now?
Not that I'm aware of. In other words, has David contacted any of them?
Or vice versa?
Not that I'm aware of. The only one, there was one grievant, Mr. Suberling, who himself suffers from depression. And there was a contact with him, and Mr. Suberling's response was, I don't blame him for what happened. I know because I myself have the same disorder. But he did not testify at the hearing, and I only offered this today because you've asked the question.
You said that the last incident was in 1995, there had been nothing since then. I understand you answered Justice Douglas' question.
Unless I am mistaken, I believe that's correct.
Well, the panel found that Mr. and Mrs. Emmons discovered, after visiting Fairmont County Courthouse in February 96, that their case hadn't been filed, and that he lied to them then, saying it had been that the court lost it. That's one of the worst defenses a lawyer could make, certainly to blame on the court. That was must have been in 96, after February, or during February. Is the board's panel incorrect, or? That was building.
That was my concern, because they mostly all happened in 95, and there was a 96 date put in there.
was it late 96 or early 96?
This says in February 96, the Emmons...
February 96.
...went to the courthouse. Look, it does not say when they finally contacted him, but...
I'm sorry, I said February 95, I should have said February 96. Okay. It's my mistake.
Our report says the three of which occurred in the years 94, 95, and 96, while respondent was engaged in the practice as a sole practitioner.
You're
said that's not a violation?
Well,
I guess my question is, we oftentimes in these cases have character witnesses, so to speak, who say, well, I've known the lawyer for a number of years and never known them to lie, or you know, all that sort of thing, but they're not given the information that we are given, and so I have to tell you, I frankly tend to discount most of the character references, because they, if they knew the conduct that we're having to deal with, they might have, and they're not asked that opinion, it's not appropriate, I suppose, to ask it, and that's why I've reacted to your question, because usually they're not asked to give their opinion about whether the conduct is ethical or not, but in this instance, this person was, I guess. But.
That's correct, and it's not a matter of, did he had all the information, he knew that these lies occurred. In fact, he's the person who prepared the affidavit for Dr. Meredith in the 1991 time frame, stating that all of these acts were a result of an illness. Okay. See that I have 2 minutes left?
Yes.
Reserve my time.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Mr. Tepper.
Please, Court, Mr. Phillips. Just a couple of brief comments. I raised a question about fees. My recollection of the facts in this case is sort of that in many instances the respondent did receive retainers, what I would call small retainers, typically $250. The time period in this case is about a 7-year period, 1990 into 1997. For example, the Carter trial, now that case started in 1995. But their trial date was February 1997. that's when Mr. Harper failed to appear day of trial, and his client suffered judgment against them. So we have a situation where this course of conduct continued over a period of about 7 years, up until a year and a half ago. In reviewing these cases, what we have here are six cases. I'm thinking this case looks more like the Fowerball case, which the court decided to, I think, in 1995. And I appreciate the fact that Chief Justice Warner in that case indicated at the beginning of his opinion that it was an opportunity to provide guidance to certain white grievance committees and the Board of the Commissioners. And I think because of that, we feel that the sanction recommended by the Board of Commissioners is minimally appropriate. Now I'm looking at the Fowerball case and saying, okay, this is very similar to three of our cases. Mr. Pavlock, one of the cases I had come to know quite well. You could characterize the Fowerball case and three of these cases in simple schematic by saying, client hires lawyer to file a case, lawyer doesn't file a case, lawyer lies to client says, I did file a case. And you've got violations involving affecting a trusted matter, not carrying out a contract of employment, engaging in conduct involving dishonesty, fraud, and deceit right away. Fireball only had two DR violations. In this case, we have 24 separate violations which the board found. I think there were five different DR violations, a total of 24 times. Now, Fireball resulted in a 6-month suspension, and I think that's certainly appropriate for one infraction or one case. This is multiplied more geometrically by six cases going on over a 7-year period. Now, I don't think it's a matter of saying we'll just take 24 times six or anything like that, but look at the kinds of things that could be imposed here. And we originally, quite frankly, thought this would be a disbarment case, but we have done what the Respondents' Counsel suggested. Consider the mitigating factors. I mean, Mr. Harper says he has many good things in his record. We know that. We accept that. We have allowed for that and said he should not be disbarred. We thought he should be given indefinite suspension. We thought that was the proper balance. And you've got that same factor in the spirit
scale. So is there any indication in all of these violations that you found that this has been any respect for personal gain?
No, I don't think so. I don't have any indication, frankly, from my investigation he did this for any personal gain. I don't doubt that he lost money based on time he spent or did not expend. It was not a money-making thing or scheme of his in any way.
In Fireball, was there anything to excuse the conduct?
I don't think there was a Fireball. As opposed to this, I say this right, Spiros, S-P-E-R-O-S, this individual also had a major depressive disorder. And that case involved what I would call a single act of presenting a fabricated false affidavit. And again, in that case, the court said 6-month suspension. That's despite the fact that gentleman, Mr. Spiros, did not receive any personal gain or benefit from his misconduct. And he's saying, I have major depressive disorder, which our respondent here is saying. And the court said, fine, 6-month suspension. And what I'm saying is, okay, we'll accept those kinds of facts in those situations and those mitigating circumstances. And say, but this is more than a 6-month suspension case. You've got six separate cases. You've got a continuing course of conduct, as the court has talked about. Not only within each case, it wasn't just something happened one time, one day, but over a 2-year period, perhaps, in each case. Lying, say, oh, the case was filed, it is coming up for trial, this is happening, that's happening. Finally, classes at the courthouse and discovers no case was ever filed. This was over a 2-year period per case. So we're saying, in view of the magnitude of the events here, the cases, the things that happened, this is more than just even a 6-month suspension. And that brief, I'd like to beat this to death. That's how we look at the case, right? That's how we see it. So if there are no further questions, I'll just leave it at that.
Mr. Tuck?
Tipper, I have a question. What is the ability, would you, if you can say, assess the ability of the Cincinnati Bar Association to monitor, assuming that Mr. Harwood is put on some form of probation at some point, what is the ability of the Cincinnati Bar to monitor his conduct? I'm just going to make it very open-ended and see what your response is to that.
Well, I feel it's something which nobody is anxious to do, but to give a more direct answer, I think we could do that if you called upon to do so. And I understood this, our site would have Dr. Meredith make periodic, quarterly, whether it's monthly or quarterly, reports of his progress. A person on our staff would look at those reports, make sure he is seeing his psychiatrist, see what those reports say. And if we had to assign a person to monitor him as far as his caseload, the kind of work he is he doing what I would call transactional work, like real estate closings, as opposed to litigated matters, I think we have the ability to do that. They call
it. Would you, I guess that what can, I appreciate your answer. I get, what concerns me is in cases in which the person must take medication to alleviate the disorder. I guess even a report from a doctor quarterly or even monthly could miss some points at which the patient doesn't comply with the regimen. And I guess the question is then what? Are we back with the same kind of, it appears to me there's a pattern here that he went off the medication and they thought he was treated or cured, I guess if that's the right term. And we got the repeat of the conduct. What's your thinking about that?
That is a concern to me based upon this and other cases. And I think in this case, you have Mr. Phelps had like two clusters less than a period when he got off medication. But very frequently, in my observation, a person takes medication, does fine, feels good, says, I don't take pills anymore. Stop taking medication. The outdoors that is a very practical problem. I don't have any answers for that.
Would you be equipped, not medically, but equipped to almost on a weekly basis or a daily basis monitor his conduct in a way that could be reassuring to us that he should continue to practice?
I think that to expect the Cincinnati Bar Association to monitor an attorney on a daily or weekly basis is burdensome. I'm not going to say it can't be done, but I think that's very burdensome, to be honest.
Well, in addition, in this particular case, Mr. Harwood has recognized that what has happened when he goes off his medication, and I would think that he would stay in closer contact with his psychiatrist. That would be the person who would be doing monitoring of this. And this certainly shouldn't be treated in any different way than any other illness, simply because it's a medical illness. We wouldn't penalize a person who stops taking heart medication. We should treat it the same. So I think that we should rely upon Mr. Harwood and his psychiatrist in monitoring that. So Mr. Harwood has recognized that he needs his medication in an ongoing way.
Yes, I would think the report from the doctor to indicate that he's continuing on his medication because we have no way of knowing that day to day.
Counsel, was there any indication that there was any level of slip up in practice in matters other than litigation? I saw that one of both persons testified suggested that.
Identified, lied, identified, involve the defendant, he didn't file an answer, didn't show up for trial, and also, well, I said I did this, I did that. But they were all litigated matters.
Thank you, Mr. Cuffers. Mr. Phillips, you saved 2.5 minutes of your time.
Counsel, here's the question I had. Your client indicated that he got part of his, the result here of his someone to serve as co-counsel or to supervise him when he goes to litigation. When would the judge conclude should ever do litigation?
I think it's the nature of the beast that we engage in day to day. When you start in a real estate transaction, I don't know that you can be guaranteed that something won't go wrong and it won't end up in litigation. And
well, I've practiced for years. Every lawyer who does real estate probate work, and used to say you tried one case when you got out of law school and won, and that was it. He does real estate all the time. He sticks strictly with transactions.
I think
it would seem to be a tremendous number of practitioners.
And they
do very well practicing law, fine lawyers. Litigation just is not for that. Here we have a pretty clear role, a clear indication that for this lawyer, litigation probably ought to just be out of his practice.
And I think that was the motivating impetus behind his statement. I can have co-counsel if I'm on the litigation. You know, put someone else in the driver's seat. You know, I'll know the proceedings. I will participate. I will coach the litigator on real estate law.
But that sounds to me like somebody who really doesn't give it up.
Oh, I don't think so. I think if it's this panel's determination that there should be no litigation, I don't think it would not be a problem.
I don't recall Seth doing that, but I'm wondering here.
And I guess you need circumstances.
That's something you should consider.
Perhaps it's something you should consider.
Whether we order it or
not. Right, exactly. I think that's a fair statement.
Because it also places, I had the same question, that question just cries out, if you have identified me, we've been talking about, he knows his problem, he's willing to take medication well, but if it's promised confrontation, he still wants to litigate, but in some instances, to require the client to pay for two lawyers, where perhaps one would be sufficient, that seems to me, that's, I don't see as accepting the responsibility and saying, I want to keep my license so badly, I'll do whatever it takes. That means I have to give up litigation, court. I want to do that. I mean, we had to talk him into it. Which
no, I don't think you have to talk him into it at all.
Maybe he's been talked into it now, but it seems to me that I always look for, you know, the person, particularly in a case like this, where you want to make sure the person recognizes the problem, they're going to deal with it. And I'm not going to lecture, but in mental health cases, it's suggested it's so easy for someone to go off the treatment because they feel better, and then we're right back with people being affected by that.
And I guess I think it's an indication that Dave does recognize the problem and does want the public protected, was that it was his idea that he had to have co-counsel during litigation. It wasn't mine, it wasn't the relator's, it wasn't yours. I mean, you come up with perhaps was another excellent alternative to just say no litigation. And in fact, I believe Maury and I talked about this at one point as a possible idea. Maybe we could say no litigation. We can that be enforced? I think so, just go to the courthouse and check the records. I see my time has expired. I did want to address the volleyball issue.
Very, very quickly.
30 seconds. I would like to thank the human lawyers for when you write these opinions. And follow up.
We We like to see that too.
We're on the same page already.
It's good if the bar thinks that way too.
It's better you be on that page.
With Powerball, what you stated was that an attorney shall receive actual time off when he engages in a course of conduct involving dishonesty, deceit, fraud. So I went to Webster's Universal Unabridged Dictionary, the second edition. I looked up the word conduct. It stated, quote, in ethics, the voluntary control and direction of one's actions toward moral or spiritual development. I thought the key word here was voluntary. And I would submit to you that what happened here was not voluntary. Mental illness is not a voluntary illness. He didn't put a needle in his arm, he didn't put powder on his nose, he didn't put a bottle in his mouth. And I would ask that you take that into consideration. Nothing is more important to pay than his license.
Thank you, Phillips. The case is submitted. You'll be advised for opinion.